like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is a CCI call on the 13th of June 2012. On the call today, we have Cheryl Langdonald, Steve DelBianco, Tobias Mahler, Rosemary Sinclair, and Michael Graham. We have apologies from Olivier Crépin-Lebrun and Julie Headland. And from staff, we have Barry Cobb and myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Rosemary.
Thanks, Natalie, and good morning, everybody, from this end. Now, my suggestion, our agenda is nice and simple. We can have a quick look at the action item, which is Barry's update, which we've got, and then I think just dive straight back into our work. And Barry, would you just confirm we've got an hour or an hour and a half on this call?
2 hours, really.
2 hours.
All right.
Hope you don't have an 8 o'clock, Rosemary.
I hope so too, Cheryl, but I'll just take it. Anyway, so if we go, I think this is how well my mind is working, Barry. I think we were at 42.
Correct, but if we can do a quick pit stop on number 25 from Steve's homework assignment.
For sure.
Steve was to take offline a review of the metrics that were suggested by the USG. He had sent a supplement document that I'll pull up right now.
Oh, good.
And Steve, maybe you can just walk us through this super fast. For each one of these, I have not pulled these into the public comment tool yet, but I will cut and paste them once we review them for the next version.
All right. Unfortunately, that would make our document considerably longer because I've got about 3 pages just on this list of items. So this is in response to the U.S. government letter where they listed a bunch of items they wanted us to consider changing in the consumer trust section. Specific metrics for consumer trust. And I should also disclose I took the author of this document out for a coffee today. Well, they bought their own, I should say. And discussed, yeah. And they're it's a career antitrust attorney at the Department of Justice who understands ICANN pretty well, but I really wanted to make it clear that the remit of this affirmation and the resolution for this working group did not include any analysis of cost versus benefits at the overall level. Mm. That was a surprise to him. So I'm really glad we had that conversation so they won't be surprised when we don't tackle costs and benefits, although any chance we get, if we have an opportunity to gather data that serves our purposes, we're happy to have that data include costs where it works. Mm. All right, so when I was there with them, I handed them this document, and they promised to get back to me on it. I wanted to give them a heads up as to what we were thinking. But I want to run through it fast, and if you guys are agreeable, Barry would paste this into our big document.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that the Justice Commerce Department said they wanted relative incidence of complaints for new and existing GTLDs. The short part of my answer is that given the metrics that we did, we've already addressed this comment. And I think Barry's got that on the screen right now. It's the bottom line there, Barry. So, again, is it sensible in our comments to list all four of the ones I cited in coming up with the statement that we've already addressed the comment? It probably does.
Rosemary here. Yes, I think that's a good idea.
Good. Second one. Malware sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that we looked at quantity and relative incidence of takedowns and phishing. And I have put the question sort of back to say, are there other instances of malware other than phishing fraud and anything that results in takedowns? And if so, those could be additional items that are listed. Anyone on the call know of specific items in addition to phishing and takedowns that are coming from malware? Because bots are going to come up, but they're separate.
Okay, that, Rosemary here, that was the only one when we were discussing this in the APEC working group, our loose definition of malware always included botnet. But if they come up somewhere else...
Yes, Sherry, next slide. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, Cheryl here. And this one's just a long shot, but I'm flagging it for your edge memory here, the future edge memory perhaps. Malware, notice my hesitation mm-hmm. here, because I'm working somewhere between privilege and information. Hypothetically speaking,
mm-hmm.
you could have a TLD or more that were rife with malware, and for whatever reason, that would cause a forced redelegation, at least in the CCTLD world. I wonder, and that is no longer, you know, I'm closing my hypothetical, I wonder, is there a parallel measure in the GTLDs? Because that's not just takedown, that's actually at that higher level. Now, if we don't want to deal with it, that's fine, but I'm...
You're asking whether the registry, the GTLD registry contract
will be...
includes a redelegation that's specifically related to malware?
Yeah, the equivalent to a redelegation, because it's not necessarily hypothetical in the near future.
Oh, that's not a bad question, but we ought to be able to get a factual answer immediately if we quickly look at the guidebook
yep.
and look at the specification 5, which is the registry contract.
Because I would think something as nuclear as that option should be an easy measure, but an important measure.
All right. Well, so we'll take it offline to check the guidebook and
yeah,
see whether
the one that strikes me. That's all. Anyway, I'll shush up now. Sorry.
No, not at all. Okay. So botnets are the next one, and I am proposing to you, the team, that we add a line said quantity and relative incidence of detected botnet sites using new GTLDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone on to say that it's not going to be easy to get the data. I don't know whether anti-phishing working group even keeps it. So it might just be that we would turn to government to get the data. And if they didn't provide it, then we wouldn't really have anything to show on this metric.
Yeah. No objection there. That's kind of ball back in their court anyway.
This is Michael for the record. Going back, I'm sorry, I was just contemplating while you were talking, Cheryl. The phishing and such doesn't include the type of malware that would include sites that were sources of worms or viruses. That's the only thing I could think of as additional types of malware that might appear.
Michael, it's my impression that worms and viruses are exactly what malware is.
Yeah.
Right, so that would be in addition to phishing sites and the like.
This is Barry. I'm just curious. You know, we're getting very specific with, you know, very specific types of abuses, and we don't have an answer as to whether another abuse exists out there that would require a takedown. Could we simplify this and say registration abuses? And I take this back from the RAP working group where they went methodically defined the different types of abuses. I don't think they went as far as saying what actions would be taken by registries, whether they'd be taken down or any of the review processes. But I don't know that we want to just limit ourselves or be so specific that we're calling out botnets and malware. If we summarize it saying registration abuses, then the future review team can deep dive into that and find specific metrics that relate to this.
Rosemary, if I could comment on that?
Yes, Steve. Yeah.
Yeah, great idea to simplify, Barry. But I do remember, and you were very active on the RAP working group, I do remember there was a lively debate about whether registration abuse includes bad activities that occurred on an already registered site, and I thought that things like phishing and malware ended up not being counted as registration abuse.
That was not a consensus position, nor was it an item that the council voted on.
So
and
that,
technically.
So that if you cited it, we wouldn't want anybody who read our simplified version to only go to a report and misunderstand what we meant. So it may not be sufficient to reference registration abuse policies paper, since a reader of that paper might conclude that it wouldn't even cover malware. Go ahead.
Sorry. Rosemary here. This is just an alternative way of dealing with Barry's point, which is that even if we leave what we've got, which is specific, if we added the general point, the quantity and abuse and relative incidents, and I'm thinking of other malware. If we take one of those points, my tongue is now twisted, and just leave ourselves the option of anything else that anybody dreams up in the future, we have a point that says measure it.
So on the one that says quantity and relative incidents of detected botnets, sites, and other malware using new GTLD?
Yes.
Yeah. Cheryl, okay. Because that covers what the don't know what we don't know cache, which is important.
And Barry, back to you, if you can find a phrase from the registration abuse paper that is unambiguously inclusive of post-registration abuse, please suggest it to all of us. Send around a note or put it in the document for our next call. I'm just afraid of being limited by what some of the members of your team tried to do to us on registration abuse.
Rosemary, Cheryl here, just following on with Steve's point. Barry, I'd have no problem if it was one of those footnote moments as well, where you might say something along the lines of included in but not limited to the work of the, you know?
But Rosemary here, that's a great idea, Cheryl, because one of the things that I think is going to be very important is that the community sees that this work that we're putting forward is linked to many other pieces of work and indeed is kind of the final step for many other pieces of work, because out of those pieces of work are things that now get measured in the context of the board resolution. So I really think that footnote is a great idea. Now I think we're back to you, Steve.
Okay. The next one is the U.S. government asking for names associated with identity theft. And Barry, remember use abuse versus registration abuse here. Identity theft is two acts. The first is the act of fishing away identities, fishing away your IDs and passwords. And that's already covered under phishing. And then subsequently, lists of stolen credit cards, stolen passwords, and stolen account names are often traded on websites. So since we already covered the phishing, all I covered here was the dealing and distribution of these account identities and lists. And that's not technically malware. It's not technically phishing. It's probably a use abuse in that I'm using the Internet domain name system to facilitate the sale of something that's illegal. Now, lots of things are illegal, but selling a list of stolen identities is specifically illegal. So I got to tell you, I hesitated to put this one in here, but I thought I would give the working group the benefit of a very expansive response to the USG and give you the chance to think this over. Because here, all I said was the quantity and relative incidence of sites found to be dealing or distributing identities and account information used in identity fraud. We thought about this more than the U.S. government ever did. That was clear to me from my meeting today.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
Rosemary here, this is, as Cheryl indicates in the chat, a very hot button, I would say, in consumer land everywhere around the world.
And therefore remember, in government land.
That's right. Now, remembering that we're deep into the weeds at this point, but what we're doing is we're working through a set of metrics that go to whether consumers think there's more or less trust in the new GTLD world. And because this is such a hot issue for consumers, I think we should be specific about this matter of identity theft. But it's very important that we understand why we're doing it. We're doing it because we're trying to assess consumer trust, not, funnily enough, because some government or another says it's illegal. So
yeah,
I think it's important that we understand why we're prepared to put it in. But I think it is a hot button and it should be there.
It's a great distinction because things that are illegal are covered by another metric we have on governments that report concerns over registries that violate applicable national laws. That's already covered somewhere else.
Yep.
See, Cheryl here, yeah, that's true, but then we get into the whole cross-border issue of what's illegal here versus what's illegal somewhere else.
Well, that's true. Our metric invites governments of any kind to tell us anytime they have concerns about their applicable national laws and websites that affected their citizens. So we know we were going to get a mixed bag of things that are offenses in some countries and not in others.
I'm not discomforted by having this slight expansion because I know it will come back out of GAC world because it is such a hot button, as Rosemary has also said, in consumer world.
I have a question for you, Cheryl. When you think of it in Australia and GAC world, et cetera, did I phrase it properly? Is this what they mean? Is this the part we need to capture, the dealing and distribution of identities and account information?
To be honest, I think that's the perfect capture, and I just wish I'd have had that language available as we were literally taking down, through our court system indeed, a registry in Australia for doing exactly the same thing. That would have been much quicker than how we said it.
You know where to find me.
Thanks, Steve.
Rosemary here. We're probably going to save the lawyers, Michael, a lot of time, which won't be helpful, will it?
Now.
Lawyers, it won't be. Billable microseconds. I'll have to move to billable microseconds instead of billable.
Now, pressing on.
All right, so let's move on. That sounds like you guys are completely comfortable keeping this explicit new item in there.
Yes, babe.
Fabulous. Okay, next item. I'm saying we don't need to do anything on this one. We already had spam. And this was something that that Olivier had put in.
Yeah, and the honeypots, all we need. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, legal misconduct, the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So the way they started off is by asking for relative incidents of breach notices, suspensions, and terminations. And when I stop the sentence there, I believe that we have already asked for a metric of breach notices for whatever reason, whether it was the officers
mm-hmm.
or any other breach notice.
Mm-hmm.
So given that, I don't think we need to add one. I did put a note in here, Barry, to check with ICANN Legal, and let's ensure that legal misconduct of officers fits within a noticeable breach to a registry contract.
Michael here. That would be my question, because as I was understanding the USG comment, their focus was less on the breach notices and more on the incidents of particular officers coming under fire for this.
But under fire is under fire three ways, notice, suspension, and termination. And all of those are related to the registry contract. They're all breaches of the registry contract.
You know, Cheryl here, I read that when I was going through the assist stuff, I read that as an add-on, not an embellishment to those three things. I read that as a in excess of conduct which would result in notice, suspension, or termination. So maybe that was just me. I actually thought that was an overreach looking at conduct of officers of registries that...
Cheryl, but if you read it plainly, they're only asking us to count breach notices, suspensions, and terminations.
But what I was saying is I didn't read it that way.
I don't think they're asking us to go out and independently tote up the number of officer misconduct, so many speeding tickets that Anthony Van Kuberen gets.
Well, not so much speeding tickets, but anything, for example, that would affect the ability of that individual to conduct business as a director under corporation's law in their jurisdiction. Right?
All right, so why don't we put it out to the group here? I'm reading it very differently than Cheryl, and this makes a big difference. What does everyone else think?
Rosemary here. I think the fact that they've contexted it in ICANN language, breach notices, suspensions, and terminations, means that we can very legitimately take the narrower focus rather than if it was... just misconduct of officers, then we could be into corporations law and the criminal law and parking tickets and all the rest of it.
Well, you don't go so far as tickets, Rosemary, but yes, that's exactly what I thought. And by the way, I believe we don't do anything in either context. I just want to be clear on the context.
Yes. So we just... okay, Rosemary again. So Steve is suggesting that we say, well, we're all already collecting... notices, breach notices, and that is going to be the biggest number in this whole spectrum of activity. So we've done that, but then we're questioning, or we want just to check with ICANN, that legal misconduct of officers would in fact generate a breach notice. So we probably just need to take that offline, I think.
Yep.
Do we need to do that though if we're not going to change the metrics?
Well, we do like to describe why we didn't change the metrics when we explain what we did with comments, right? And that would require to explain why we didn't adopt this because we feel like it's already covered.
Hmm. Okay, if you want to just that's fine if we're not going to do anything in terms of change.
Right.
There's pressure from parts of the at large community to practically go to parking notices. Know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm.
There are a few people out there who, you know, get carried away.
And I left XX in there, and it should be the number 2.
Mm.
And I'm talking about page 7 of our table. We had 2 metrics in there for the relative incidence of breach notices for contract or compliancy matters. And the reason we have 2 is that we have 1 in there for registries and 1 for registrars.
Mm.
So you could clarify that we recommended a metric for registry breach notices, and if you can confirm our understanding of legal misconduct, then we don't have to make any changes, just a response.
Yep, perfect.
Cool.
This is Barry. I'll take that action item. I'm not sure I'll be able to get an answer even by next week. Personally, I was off the cuff, and I haven't memorized the registry agreement, but I don't recall ever seeing any language in the proposed registry agreement that would say that if the CEO of X registry embezzled money and got thrown in jail in his region or his territory, that would mean a breach notice from ICANN. I kind of think that's a long shot, but I need to. I'll check for sure.
Okay, Rosemary,
right.
Nothing about fit and proper person.
And Rosemary, that's why some of our community gets their knickers in a knot.
Yeah, right. And
if they've been talking enough to the necessary people in government, mm-hmm. and they will be in Australia as well,
mm-hmm.
now I would suggest we leave it alone for the purposes of our, but this is one of those, it's going to be in the wings, so keep that in your short-term memory as well, team.
What was that?
Yes. Oh, that's so cute. I love you. I'll ask you again in a minute.
I think that was press on.
Okay, next one.
Yep.
All right, they mentioned data security breaches. And a data security breach is not a crime. So there may not be a complaint issued about it. In other words, somebody could have lost the laptop, but that's a breach. A bad actor could have hacked into a system. That's a breach. The company could have a lot of bugs. There could be a hack by WikiLeaks. It could be anything that contributes to a data security breach. When it, and by the way, I added the word data security, not just the word security, because I don't think the U.S. government here is asking us to look into break-ins at the building or elements like that. We're only talking about data security here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm explaining that we did not have an explicit metric for data security breaches, but we did have one that would include a data security breach that violated a law, because we already had a metric in there for the quantity of compliance concerns with respect to applicable national laws. And we brought this up earlier in the discussion, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
And some nations have different laws about a breach, et cetera. But I also know that many nations have rules about reporting of a data security breach, even in instances where there was no crime or negligence committed. And that reporting carries the force of law, where they must report it. So to cover the reported breaches that are not crimes, I added the, after the comma, including reported data security breaches. What does everybody think of that?
Rosemary here, I think that's great, Steve, because I'm just thinking in the Australian context already that there are things like the Critical Infrastructure Working Group, and they require security breaches, data security breaches. I'm thinking about the electricity network and the telephone network and all that sort of stuff. So that captures it beautifully. And the other issue is that I think out of the discussion that we're all following about phone hacking, that over the next 3 or 4 years we might see a number of pieces of legislation in various countries around data security. So they'll be all captured under applicable national laws. So I think that's a terrific formulation. Tobias?
Yes. This is Tobias. Basically, I think this is interesting, but we might have some problems in comparing different countries, where some countries require security breaches to be reported and others don't. In Europe, the situation is currently such that if you are a telco, then you have to report data security breaches. Otherwise, usually not in the current regime. Now, the EU is proposing a new regulation, but that's probably not going to become into force for the next 5 years or so. So from Europe, you would usually not have that many data security breaches outside telcos and perhaps the banking sector, but then that depends on national legislation. Thank you.
Thanks, Tobias. Steve?
Tobias, you're exactly right. This particular metric, which we designed months ago, anticipates that every applicable national law will have a different threshold for what is a crime or what has to be reported. We understood that. We meant to be comprehensive but not necessarily consistent. The whole point of this metric is to compare these inconsistent but comprehensive quantity of metrics between the new GTLDs and the legacy GTLDs. And so we're comparing the same inconsistent set of comprehensive crime reports. In other words, it's okay to be inconsistent as long as we're comprehensive and we're comparing the new versus the legacies.
This is Tobias. Yes, but basically, wouldn't all of the existing, the legacy GTLDs be in the U.S. jurisdiction and under an obligation to report, while many of the new ones would not be under such obligation?
I can answer that very quickly. The locus of the registry has nothing to do with the obligation to report. The obligation to report is a function of where the customers are, whose data got lost, whose data got stolen. I realize it's only sensible to enforce that in the case where the government who's concerned about its citizens has the reach of the registry, and that may limit it somewhat. But I wouldn't even concede that most registries are in the United States today. Of the 22 GTLDs, I don't even think half of them are in the United States. So we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good here. what you point up is true, but probably doesn't change the utility of a metric that asks governments to report to us their compliance concerns, and now that we're amending it, their compliance concerns as well as data security breaches that were reported to them. I don't have much confidence that the governments will cooperate. I mean, between us girls, we're not going to get a lot of data on this metric.
Mm.
We're asking for it. We're trying to be responsive, but the governments like to, they like to make a lot of policy recommendations, but it's amazing how infrequently they follow through with specific data to help us do our job.
Yes, I agree.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Toby.
Go ahead, Barry, sir.
I was just going to say or echo that. The burden of the data is on the governments and the law enforcement activity and entities that would track this, and I would question how quickly they'll sign up to even turn some of the data over.
Hmm.
All we can do is recommend it be there, and then I can, and ask for it.
And Rosemary, again, and once again, it's important to remember why we're even having this discussion, and it's because we're trying to assess perceived consumer trust and things that might impact on that. So coming at it from that end, this is important, and I think we should include it with the amendment that Steve has made. And then if governments don't respond, then that will be a very interesting scenario. Because we're quite clearly doing this to support consumer trust in the ICANN space. So that'll be a whole other interesting discussion. Anything else on that point, or we'll go to the last one?
Well, Michael here, just to voice my agreement that I like the proposed amendment that Steve's put forward. And I think on perhaps in addressing to the issue of whether or not the information available to actually make this review, since it requires the cooperation and assistance of the governments, that somehow that be put within the proposed amendment in noting the difficulties of obtaining the information, that we would be relying on governmental and law enforcement agencies to provide this information.
We did in the report on page 8, Michael, we indicated that on this one, anticipated difficulties were, quote, difficult because law enforcement and governments may not report this data.
Mm.
And you've done what I asked for. Thank you so much.
All right, last item. It looks like we're being asked to do the surveys more frequently than just one time at the end of the three-year target. Personally, I believe that's a great idea. And I don't know exactly where to put it in our table. The surveys were on page 7 of our table. This was the survey of consumers, which is going to cover both trust and choice matters. And somewhere in that row, maybe under the bottom of it, that these should be done at least annually. That would be what I would recommend, is to put that in our recommendation that these surveys be done annually.
Rosemary here, I'm happy to support that.
Yep, works for me.
And particularly in, we have said many times in these discussions about the emergence of the new GTLD, that it will take some time before those new GTLDs get up to speed. And sometimes the speed will be great, and then sometimes it won't be, but the time that it will take for that market to shake down and settle down means that we do need to conduct this survey a number of times. So annually, I think, is good.
Great. Okay, I think that's it for my assignment. So we have a couple of tie-up items for Barry, and then you can plug it into the table.
You get an A-plus from me, Steve.
Oh, yeah, hey. That's really great work, Steve. Really.
Well, thank you. Good. Where were we when we finished up just 24 hours ago then?
48? No, 42. 42? Were we 42?
42.
I thought we were further along.
30, maybe 43. We were doing the internet traffic one.
Right.
43 we were, I think.
You know, I did bring this up at my coffee with the Justice Department here in the United States today. I said, because they're all over competition. We haven't gotten to that yet, but they keep wanting to assess competition in terms of the number of registrations. And I said, it's at least as important to measure user traffic to the new GTLDs as a measure of whether users view them as legitimate choices in competition for the Gs. So the word traffic doesn't show up in what the USG put in. It's here in the comment from INTA. And to my knowledge, we never had anything on traffic at all in our first draft advice, did we?
No, Rosemary here, not that I recall, no. And again, if I move away from the technical language to what we're trying to do here, what we're trying to do here is measure whether consumers are trusting this new GTLD world by actually using the domain names. So it's when I'm looking at this point, it looks like a technical telco point. But if what we're trying to do is suggest a measure which says, well, we've got all these shiny new toys around the place, but either no one's using them because they're fearful, or everybody's using them lots and lots because they're very happy. That's what we're trying to do here, I think, with this measure. But we didn't get to that point of actually using the new GTLDs in our previous advice.
Well, I do hope that that we can fashion in the next couple of minutes a metric about traffic that is at least determinable. I think traffic's a great idea, but let's not overcomplexify it, and let's be realistic here, because the websites themselves only would know the traffic. The registry zone is not going to know it because of cache, and the registrars won't always know it. So it may be that we have to count on a data reporting service to report traffic. And who was mentioning that in the end of the call? Somebody said that Alexa or someone else does?
Olivia was mentioning it, yeah.
It was Olivia, was it, Cheryl?
Yes.
Yeah.
Barry, would you scroll the doc? Is there more than what I'm seeing? Yeah, Alexa. And it was Olivia for the transcript. So what?
That's not his actual name, but it may as well be these days.
All right. So why don't Michael, are you with us or did you step away?
I think Michael stepped away briefly.
Well, then why don't we wait for Michael to come back and then we'll
Loop
do
back.
This one, because we ought to design a new metric that measures traffic subject to the availability of commercially obtainable sampled data on new versus legacy GTLDs.
Okay. Rosemary here. I'd like to suggest that we actually reword the measure to capture this point that the only reason we're interested in traffic is because we're trying to measure whether consumers have enough trust that they'll actually use the new GTLDs. So when we get back to this discussion, I'd just really like to reword the measure with that kind of little introduction.
Fair point.
Otherwise,
well, that's important.
Cheryl.
Because there are other ways to artificially boost up, in inverted commas, traffic. And what we want is user use.
Yes, Rosemary here. And I think that unless we make it explicit why we've got this measure, then people will have the same reaction we did initially.
Yeah.
Which
good
is
point.
Say, oh, well, what is it to us whether, you know, there's all this traffic and so on. So we avoid that by just linking it clearly to our task.
Okay. 44. We're coming back to 43 when Michael returns?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so 44 is from the registry stakeholder group with respect to page 9, metric number 4. Under the measures of consumer choice on page 9, we believe the meaning of quantity of TLDs using IDN scripts or languages other than English should be made clearer with the understanding that the metric increases the number of TLDs offering these choices relative to 2011. Refers to the quantity of operators offering actual IDN GTLDs
if this understanding is correct, we believe it will be clear with revised wording along the lines of increase in the number of PLDs and IDN scripts or languages other than English relative to 2011. Since the current wording could be interpreted to cover only the use of IDN scripts on websites or in promotions, etc., but not in the PLD string itself. Same point probably applies to the next measure quantity of registrar websites offering IDN scripts in languages other than English.
Rosemary, here, could someone translate that into English for me?
You can just focus on what they have in quotations.
Yeah.
Where they say they want to propose changing what we had.
Okay, okay.
Which?
To increase in number of PLDs offering these choices relative to 2011.
Right, and yeah, is he only changing the target column or are they changing the actual measure column?
Because, Rosemary, again, because we have that in the three-year target, that exact phrase, and I think the measure is how many of these things there are, and then the target should be that there are more of them. And they want to take the target and make it the measure.
You know, maybe the difference is that when we wrote the target column, we wrote the word offering these choices, and which is really referring back to the two columns to the left. It's referring back to the column where we describe the choice we're speaking of. It sounds like they just want us to load up the language in the target column so it matches the language we use to describe the metric.
We understand that the metric, so they're talking about the target as if it were the metric, refers to the quantity of operators offering actual IDN GTLD. Is that something different from what we have covered in the actual measure?
The actual measure reads today, this is page 9, quantity of TLDs using IDN scripts for languages other than English. And the registries have repeated that in Barry's little summary on the screen in front of you. Okay, and then they went on to say, let's just jump down to where they say, we believe it will be clearer to change the wording to say, quote, increase in the number of TLDs. Well, the word increase obviously isn't a measure, it's a target. So maybe they're really saying that the target column should read, increase in the number of TLDs and IDN scripts or languages other than English relative to 2011. So because they start with the word increase, so they're only referencing column 4,
yeah.
And I think we should do that. It just takes a little more space in the column. It's what we meant. It's an easy one to give.
If that's the context, then yes, if it's just the target, yeah.
Rosemary, I understand that now. And I'm happy to support it.
Beautiful. So it's the two of the rows in a row. We can get rid of two of these.
That's right.
Barry, we're saying that the fourth column, which we called our three-year target column, we had used shorthand in there saying, quote-unquote, offering these choices relative to 2011. And we shouldn't say offering these choices. We should say offering blank, where we fill it in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Barry?
Yes.
Should we jump back to 43 now that Michael's back?
Michael back? Are you back, Michael?
Oh, my bad. He didn't have the negative symbol next to his name. Sorry.
Hearing nothing? No. Okay.
Want to go to 45?
Yep. Are you... Okay.
Can we just do 45?
45 is new.
No, but wasn't 44 and 45 dittoed?
44 had two things in it. It had...
Right.
the registrar and the registry row, Cheryl, so we wanted to have Barry do the same thing for both rows.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so it's two rows in our table, but only one row in Barry's document.
Right. Pay attention to Barry's document then.
This is our document.
Sorry.
That's what I like to hear.
We see you, Barry.
All right, so this one should be easy. All the registries want us to do is to be explicit, because what we said is where registries are based, and that could be ambiguous. When you say registry, mm-hmm. somebody might conclude it's the operator. Some might include it's the back-end service provider. So we should be explicit and say operator.
Okay.
Where the registry operators are based. And an operator is not the same thing as the service provider. It's the operator who's the contracted party, and that's the one we're holding accountable to this metric.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep.
And that works across all TLDs, GC, or any other form that may come out in the future.
Good. So, Barry, on the bottom of page 9, where it says quantity of different national legal regimes where new GTLD registry operators are based. All right, 46. Now we're into CHOI. Okay, next page.
What? Next page?
Okay, we do not believe that it's accurate. Really.
He's in hard copy world. It's all right, Rosemary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Barry, would you mind? I like our modus operandi of getting Barry to read them out, read the comments out.
They're very long, but this one, I could summarize this one quickly. It's a consistent concern where the registries are saying that you shouldn't assume that a sunrise in a domain block is a defensive registration. It's not necessarily a defensive registration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we get that. And we had a long talk about this yesterday,
yeah.
that we have three measures in here that are potential indicators, I think that's the phrase we use, potential indicators of defensive registration.
Yeah.
To be taken together, because they're merely potential and not actual indicators, we believe that the three-year targets need to be generous. Generous is not the right word. The three-year targets need to accommodate the imprecision of the measure and the tendency to overcount defensive registrations.
Mm-hmm.
With that caveat, and we probably ought to put a row in our table so that all three of these measures on page 10 get caveated that way. Yeah, we came up with new language, for instance, on the redirects yesterday to talk about potential indicators of defensive registration.
Mm.
So I would hope that by clarifying that we have three measures, all of which are just potential indicators, clarify that we don't mean to say that they are necessarily defensive, and that we therefore set three-year targets that are high enough
mm-hmm.
to accommodate any overcounting in the measure.
I'm uncomfortable with the terminology high enough being associated with a data set like that.
Mm-hmm. Then you could just say that we have set targets that accommodate potential overcounting. How about
targets,
that?
Yes, that's it. That will accommodate. Yes, that I'm comfortable with. Thank you.
Rosemary here. That doesn't quite address their point, because they are suggesting that we do not count, that early in the process we look at a registration, or we're looking at two registrations, and we say that one is defensive, but this other one is not defensive, even though it's using the same name, etc., if you look in the middle of their comment. So they are suggesting that we do not count, which, so I think what I'm hearing us saying is that that's too sophisticated. We can't see a way of not counting them. So we want to count them all, but have the bar on the metric high enough to let the registrations that are not really purely defensive, to let them...
Correct. Count them all, but accommodate for the fact that we know that is an issue.
Okay.
That's right. And accommodation is done three ways. We have two other metrics, defensive registrations, and they're to be taken together. They're not supposed to be, oh, my, you failed one of the three. There's clearly too much defensive registrations going on in this new GTLD space.
Steve, can we make that more bleedingly obvious then?
We were just discussing that the header row above these three measures,
that's right,
should indicate
jointly, not severally. The following measures are to be taken jointly, not severally.
That's right, where each is a potential indicator of possible defensive registration. They're not meant to be precise, and the targets therefore accommodate potential overcounting of defensive registrations.
This is clear. Since the issue of defensive registrations is so important, and it was also the first thing I think that got picked up in the blogosphere about this, the first report we issued, perhaps it would be a good idea to explain this approximation approach somewhere outside the table. It's just in order to communicate it in a more understandable way to many people who might not otherwise get this point so easily, either in the beginning or at the end of the document, somewhere where we just explain this. How do we deal with this in a general way? And then you can understand the details by looking at the tables. Perhaps that's possible. Thank you.
Got it. And Tobias, you're cognizant that in the table, we occasionally have a row that has it's in italics where we explain something about the next two or three rows.
Mm.
And it's useful to put it there since it's in italics, it pops out at you. And in context, it's right next to the actual three metrics. And I don't have any objection to also copying it outside the table, but you've got to have it in the table so that it's right there when you're about to read those three metrics.
Rosemary here. I'm actually just looking at page 10 in our document, and before this set of measures, there is a little box in italics. What's there we would need to work on. But I think it's good to have it near the material that people are going to be reading, but as an introduction to that section of the table.
Yeah, that's my bleedingly obvious statement. I think it needs to be blinking,
Okay.
And we've made some substantial changes to the italics as well as to the three measures over the last couple of calls, specifically with respect to proxy and privacy, and including this qualifier that it's potential with redirects. They're just potential indicators. Mm-hmm. So... I believe that we're going to address this comment by qualifying that these are only potentially defensive registration. There are at least two other measures that should be taken in concert, and that the targets accommodate potential overcounting of defensive registration. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. So, Barry, are you clear on that? And is there anything that out of the chat that we need to pull into this discussion?
Vaguely clear. While you guys are having the discussion, my word crashed, so I had to recover from that.
Okay.
I already have the action to go back through the MP3 to make sure that I captured everything. But in general, we just need to update our italic bar to better explicitly state everything that... Steve had just mentioned.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then can we go on to 47?
Okay, 7 is also from the registry stakeholder group, referencing page 11, metric number 4, quantity of unique GTLD registry service providers before and after expansion. Is a CCTLD operator that becomes a GTLD operator considered a unique provider? We believe it should be. If this is the case, the metric of 2x might be achievable. If not, it might be hard to achieve because of the cost of becoming a new registry service provider.
Well, it strikes me, if you look at the footnote that Barry designed for this particular measure, we would be answering yes. That if a CCTL, because remember, we started with the number 16, right? Increases 2x over the 2011 number, which was 16. Mm-hmm. And footnote, is it footnote 4?
1, isn't it? Oh, end notes.
Yeah, end note. End note 4. We counted VeriSign, Affilius, Neustar, Core,
mm-hmm.
PIR, and Mid-Counties Cooperative Domains.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Barry. I don't want to stop the discussion here, but I did make an error with this one. This one should be belong in the competition section, which we haven't started yet. But I'll move it down there for the next version.
No problem.
Sorry, Cheryl.
Can we just deal with it while we're on it?
Yes, we can.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but I'm confused because the introduction talks about the quantity of unique GTLD registry service providers, but then we get, or the measure rather, then we get into the commentary and it's talking about CCTLD operators.
And correct, because a number of CCTLD registry operators or service providers are applying for new GTLDs. Both flavors, back-end and front-end
yep.
providers.
Okay, but in our measures, Rosemary here, we have separate measures for registry operators and registry service providers. So this seems to put them all in the same bucket to me.
Let's look at, I'm going to dig up the registry's actual comment. We may have misquoted it a little bit.
Okey-doke.
It definitely reached to the limits for Microsoft Word.
You found an endpoint?
We've helped you, Barry.
Wow. Now I really am in awe of you. I mean, you had me at pivot tables, but now I'm really impressed.
Barry,
Steve's looking up the words. I became a fan of Barry when he introduced pivot tables to the vertical integration discussion.
That's like a modern French ballet.
Do you know what? To try to solve this, you're right, Barry. You copied it accurately from the registry's comment, and they referenced the service provider row, but then they end up using the word operator in their sentence. So
yeah.
On the assumption. They could mean both.
Uh-huh.
We have spoken very clearly on this because in the target column, we actually indicate who they are. That's the beauty of the footnotes or the endnotes. We actually listed the ones we met.
Hmm.
So I think we are saying that it is an increase in competition. If some of those folks that were either doing the operation or back end of a CCTLD decided to jump in the pool and work on GTLDs. If that happens, we treat them as if they're increasing the quantity of operators on the G side. If we're all okay with that, then we're giving an affirmative answer to this one.
Rosemary here, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we need to change the way we've written the table, though. Because we did say the word unique GTLD registry operators, and unique GTLD service providers before and after expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's note that we support, we agree, we concur with the registry's comment, and that the end notes make that clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rosemary here. Maybe we do have a problem, because if we go to footnote 4, we've got 6 unique providers, and what we're saying is if VeriSign now, say it was doing CCTLD support, and now it goes into GTLD, what we have to capture in our language is that from our point of view, VeriSign, the same company, is 2 unique service providers.
Could you clarify that VeriSign is now 2 different entities because they made a new subsidiary?
Well, no, they didn't do anything, Steve. My understanding of your summary of the registry operator's point was that if someone who's operating in CCTLD space now decides to go and operate in GTLD space, that we should regard that as an increase in competition in the GTLD space. And I'm quite happy with that. But then when I looked down the list, I thought, well, sorry about that, the list isn't going to grow. And I just took as example VeriSign. If they're currently operating in CC space and then they go into new G space, then my list of registry service providers hasn't grown. Where they're operating has changed for the better because they're supporting the emergence of the new market. And then I got stuck on the word unique. For me, the name VeriSign is unique. The fact that they're playing in the 2 sandpits causes me problems, because it's just the one entity, but in 2 different sandpits. And I'm happy in terms of competition increase to say, well, we've got better competition, but I got stuck then back on the list, because the list wouldn't change. We would still only have, well, pardon me, from a VeriSign point of view, there would be only one entry for VeriSign on our list.
All right, if I could respond to that, the footnotes indicate the list that was in place in 2011,
mm-hmm.
And we said that there, footnote 4 says there were 6 generic or GTLD registry service providers prior to expansion.
Yes.
So the end note, Barry, probably should say that. This is not the list before and after. This is the before list. And then our metric, which was a very modest metric, was that there should be twice as many, which means that you should get 12 instead of 6. 3 years in, there should be 12, not 6, unique operators. And VeriSign will, of course, be in both lists. They'll be part of the 6, they'll be part of the 12, but they're only going to be 1 in the 6, okay. And they'll be 1 of the 12.
That's okay.
You with me? So that it ought to be very easy to hit 12,
okay.
Because we know of many other registry service providers who were part of the 1,900 applicant pool that was released today.
Okay. We know that now, but that's not the registry stakeholder group comment. As I understand it, the registry stakeholder group comments, and I know they're mixing up service providers and operators. I am sticking with service providers. Right?
Okay.
They are saying if a service provider supporting CCTLD space becomes a service provider supporting GTLD space, we should count that as 2. And
not if they were already in the G space. I'm pretty firm that they understood that if they were already running in the G space, they wouldn't be in addition to the G space. But there are CCTLD service providers today who don't play in the G space but hope to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they'll
okay.
count in the new space.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what we are counting. We're expecting
right.
the things to come from some of those. It's more likely than not that some of those 6, when they hit the target, and I'm pretty confident they will come from experienced service providers.
Right, but when we designed this metric, we didn't care where they came from.
Exactly right.
No,
all we
right.
said is count them. Count the ones who are still alive 3 years in And there ought to be twice as many as we had in 2011.
Yes.
And, of course,
new startups or old experience, we don't care. What their experience comes from, we don't care. We just need to see them change.
That's it. Or not change, we need to see it grow.
Yeah. No, I'm happy. Rosemary here, I'm happy with that now. Okay.
Hey, we have Michael Graham back. So before we jump to new entrants, we should jump back to the one he was working on.
And Rosemary here, I've just got to disappear for 5 minutes now, so do you mind taking the chair, Steve?
Not at all.
Thank you.
Which one was I working on, Steve?
43.
Ah.
43, Michael, we would like to add a metric for traffic, and we haven't figured out how to say it. We understand that traffic will be an important measure not only of competition, but of choice and even trust. So we want to measure traffic. We know we can't get it from the zone files. ICANN can't give it to us. But we're hoping that something like Alexa, an objective third-party data service, could give us statistics on traffic. And we need to propose some sort of a definition. I wrote one, and I was going to, it's in the chat. I'll repost it to the chat.
Okay. Let me.
I love the fact you can spell contemporaneously, but you can't spell should.
Thanks a lot, Cheryl.
I think it says a lot about how we think and write, actually.
All right, I'm about to hit the paste button after I fix my typos from Cheryl here.
And while you're typing that, Steve, it's actually not going to be Alexa that we'll use. Alexa will only track the top, maybe 10,000 domains out there. When you start looking at domains that have hardly any traffic, they don't show up with stats. So really the provider of this information will be DNS scrubbers that will scrub DNS traffic so that we can understand that.
And tell me more about the scrubbers. Are they vendors who will sell their reports to us, or do we have to contract them specifically to go measure this?
I'm not an expert at it, but I am familiar with one entity that pays for that traffic.
And they're paying for it. I assume the ISPs are the ones who provide the data.
Well, they're the ones from where the data comes.
I know, like, Internet Identity that does all of the abuse reporting and service providing, they do the actual DNS scrubbing themselves.
Yes.
How they acquire that through the ISPs, I'm unsure, but there are several service providers out there that seem to be doing this.
Steve, while you're thinking on that, I think if I can channel Olivier for a minute, he was also suggesting that the use of something like Alexa, it could be part of the data set bundle, because if, for example, there was a measurable proportion of new GTLDs appearing in that top listing, that would be an interesting observation and indeed worthy metric.
Okay. So I think that when we finish coming up with the metric, we should have under the data column an indication that data services such as Alexa could be useful for top traffic sites, and
yes,
other sources should be explored for lower traffic websites. But let's refer to column A, which is what do we say as for the metric? And then, Michael, since this is something you brought up, what's your feeling on the definition I just proposed?
I like it. The only I actually only have one minor change, and that was simply to repeat user traffic in before contemporaneous. So that last sentence would read somewhat redundantly but correctly. User traffic in new GTLD should be compared to user traffic in legacy GTLDs. I don't know if we need contemporaneous, because that would be user traffic at the same time of both of those.
Yeah, that's what I mean by it, and I only wanted to show off that I could spell it. We didn't say it everywhere, but sometimes we compare to things in 2011, but most of the time when we compare to GTLD, legacy, we're almost always comparing the same period, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need the word contemporaneous. In fact, it's an extraneous contemporaneous word.
An extemporaneous contemporaneous word.
Oh, God. Time for coffee, too.
God, but I think, you know, just pointing that out, we're looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
That would be fine. And, yeah, I think leaving it open because, I suppose the only thing in handling the metrics where we're actually looking at empirical data on something like web traffic, the only thing that concerns me is that in the data, that data should be from the same source so that the same, presumably, the same uncertainty is applied at both the test that is made now and the test that is made 1 year down the line.
Well, this is not a test of coming back to today. This is an in-parallel test.
Right. But it would be looking at... Well, in looking at that, would the metric be that we would be looking at greater traffic overall or greater traffic in the new GTLDs?
It said we're looking to compare, and the comparisons will be two ways. We'll look to see growth in the new space relative to the legacies, contemporaneous.
That should be in there as well then.
Right. So in 2015, you look at the new, and the traffic is 2 billion hits in 2015. And that's up 40% from the year before. And at the same time, the traffic in the G space, the legacy for the same period, was 8 billion hits, and it was up only 10% from the previous year. So in that case, the comparison would show that the legacies still had the most of the traffic because they have most of the domains. But they're growing perhaps less quickly than the new space, and that would be an indication that the new space is fulfilling some measure of consumer trust. They're exercising their choice by going to those sites, whether directly or by clicking on a search engine, and that is also probably an indicator of competition.
And I think importantly, because otherwise, I mean, you may have all the new domains in the world, but if nobody is going there, it really isn't offering a choice that's being utilized.
Correct.
So I took out contemporaneous and I repeated user traffic and reposted it to the chat. And I did put the word exercise choice, not just potential choice, because potential choice is measured elsewhere when we measure the quantity of choices. This is only an empirical measure of are the dogs eating the dog food.
Right. And then I guess the source then, you had just stated, would be Alexa.
Barry, did you have a line for that with respect to Alexa and as well as other sources that that deal with lower traffic websites?
I'll just put DNS scrubbers / Alexa.
Okay. And Michael, just so you're clear, for INTA's purposes, this will be an approximation. It will not be an actual measure of traffic. They do sampling. They don't necessarily look at every single TLD. The only way to get that is to go to the ISPs and every ISP on the planet to ask them about what they're serving up to people.
Right. I understand that, and I don't think we anticipate. We're dealing with trademark attorneys, not patent attorneys, so.
Oh, really? Not the anal ones, right?
So we understand what we're looking for here is not so much the accurate numbers as an accurate reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think in the target column, we should go ahead and indicate. Not that the new traffic should be greater than the legacy. I don't know that that's even something we want to measure. We want to compare them in order to show growth in the new GTLD traffic relative to growth in the legacy GTLD traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We expect the new to be growing faster than the old.
Right. So we're not looking for greater traffic in the new than in the old. We're looking for greater growth in the new than in the old, since this is a new zone of choice.
Correct.
I think so. And given that growth is relative to the prior year, the tiny denominators in year one and two on traffic, it'll be relatively easy for the new GTLDs to show a doubling of traffic each year as they ramp up. Because think about it. I mean, some of these won't even get into the zone until 2014 or 15 because of batching, and they ought to do just fine on this.
Mm-hmm. And can I just suggest to Cheryl here that there is a reasonable expectation that general TLD traffic, not even G, general TLD traffic, can increase by the, you know, drop in a pond affecting a ripple affecting everyone type stuff that happens with new GTLD expansion if it is successful and does get consumer trust and confidence.
Mm. And let me ask somebody, the engineers on the phone, if a redirect was in effect for netchoice.org, does the traffic end up counting it twice? It probably doesn't. I think the ISP tries to get a resolution and the redirect, who knows?
No, it would count twice.
Yeah.
It would count twice because when you do that redirect, you have to tell it where it's going, and so the cache or the DNS will have to know that secondary address.
Okay. Another, that's another reason for Cheryl's ripple effect, some redirects. Okay, Michael, you think we're good on this INTA comment?
Yes, I think we've addressed that fine.
All right, Rosemary, you're back, so take it up for the next one.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Now, so I think we're at 48, or yes? Got through 47. Thanks for your patience in regard to me. So 48.
Okay, 48 is also by the Registry Stakeholder Group with respect to page 11, metric number 6, the relative share of new GTLD registrations held by new entrants. For purposes of this measure, new entrants are GTLDs run by registry operators that did not operate in a legacy GTLD. Their question was, does this count existing CCTLD operators who become GTLD operators as new entrants? We believe it should, and this should be explicit.
And team, the answer is yes. And we did make it explicit.
Hmm.
Read our second sentence says, for purposes of this measure, a new entrant is GTLD by an operator that didn't operate a legacy GTLD. And if we want, we could probably put a footnote there, an end note, because that would be end note number 3. Which is currently 16. What do you think, Barry? Put end note 3 on number 48, or reference the same list of 16 operators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And so we're agreeing with the registries on this one, and we'll even dot the I and cross the T by referencing the list.
Rosemary, here, I'm happy with that.
Yep. Cheryl, ditto.
Good.
Okay, number 49, we have already reviewed through this one, which was Chuck and our Costa Rica session, and this basically is what we beat to death about not counting privacy proxy registrations.
Okay, so we...
there was, I did add a quick comment here. Michael, in your secondary reply comment, you had mentioned for number 49, separate numbers should be developed for Sunrise and defensive registration, as many Sunrise sites are not merely defensive. I think we've covered that. We understand the notion that the future review team is going to have to deep dive around what a defensive registration really is, and we all understand that a registration in Sunrise does not always equate to a defensive registration.
And we're going to state it explicitly in the italicized note that will precede those three measures.
Okay, that's good.
Yep.
Just a friendly reminder, save your work every second.
Oh, Barry. You haven't lost it again, though, have you?
Oh, no.
Going on 4 crashes now.
All right,
so number 50 is from the United States government. This is from their comments. They're referring to consumer trust in the metrics section. I'll read through this very quickly. Consumer choice measures. Consistent with our proposed revisions to the definition of consumer choice, measures of consumer choice should include measures of price, which is an important dimension of consumer choice, as well as quality and diversity of offerings. Seeking information on these factors will help determine whether consumers have meaningfully expanded choices on various dimensions, including price, quality, and diversity of product offerings. The proposed criteria for evaluating defensive registration should be modified. First, calculating defensive registrations, page 10, is too narrow to the extent it focuses only on registrations of domains that were previously registered in legacy PLDs. Defensive registrations could also follow form, among other things, domains that were previously registered in CCTLDs or new GTLDs that were introduced before another new GTLD commences operation. The criteria to quantify defensive registration should be expanded to include those possibilities. Conversely, the proposed criteria for defensive registrations may be too broad because it is unlikely that every registration in the new GTLD of a domain that is already registered in another TLD will be for defensive purposes. We suggest that the survey proposed in the tables on pages 6 and 7 seek data on this issue so that adjustment might be developed to take account of the purposes. And I'll stop there. There's quite a bit to deliberate on.
Rosemary here. Are there any comments?
Yeah, let's do whatever we can with our survey, Ro. I mean, I told you earlier that I met with U.S. government today and I probed what they were getting at here.
Mm-hmm.
And this one does not take us down that dead end of costs versus benefits. So it does deserve some attention. Mm-hmm. But whenever possible, the survey of registrants will be the place to go where a registrant says, yeah, I'm in the new space, but I'm there for defensive purposes. And we did say we would do a survey. The survey on consumer trust would include a question that gets to whether people are doing duplicates. I'm talking about the third row on page 10 of our table, that's the consumer choice measures.
Yeah.
We were going to survey duplicate registrations. So could we ask other questions in that survey where we ask people, was it for defensive purposes or was it to acquire new traffic?
Rosemary here. Since we're asking the specific question about duplicate registrations, then in that section of the survey, it strikes me that we should be a little more expansive because people might answer the specific question no for whatever reason, but not feel that that's really capturing their intent of why they did what they did. So if we broaden that a little, then I think from the consumer point of view, that would probably be a good thing.
Would we be limiting ourselves by sampling only those that we suspected were duplicate registrations? Because the way we wrote it a couple of months ago was, quote, survey a sample of duplicate registrations in new GTLDs, mm-hmm. where duplicates are those where the registrant reports having and still maintaining the same domain. probably don't want to say that the survey vendor would restrict themselves to ask the questions of people that had duplicates. Instead, the survey vendor would pick a statistical significant sample of registrants in the new GTLDs and then ask them a series of questions, right, about why they registered, if they redirected, if they duplicated. Mm-hmm. You could even ask them if they're satisfied that they had an effective choice, mm-hmm. and if they're satisfied that there's additional competition. Why not throw the whole kitchen sink in there if we're going to do a survey of registrants?
Mm-hmm. Michael here, and as I'm reading this and what you just said, Stephen, it seems to me that the intent of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, when this was originally written, was to determine the number and type of defensive registrations that may have been made as part of each of these registration rounds of applications, and then to find out information about those defensive registrations. And I'm asking that with a confused look on my face, which you cannot quite see, because what it says is survey a sample of duplicate registrations in new GTLDs. And my response to that from a outsider's point of view would be, okay, what are you surveying? What are we trying to find? I think your suggestion, Steve, that we broaden this and that the intent of this is not to survey what we have narrowly defined as defensive registrations, those registrants, but to survey registrants to determine, one, was their application a defensive application, and if so, was it a duplicate? Was it utilized through a Sunrise provision? Or in what way were they acting defensively with that? And then compare that to the number that said, no, this is not defensive, and have a photograph then of, you know, the number of registered GTLDs that were out there that we project this onto and say, this is the percentage that were defensive, this is the percentage that was not, and that gives a real choice and is real competition.
I'd like to register my agreement with that and suggest the way we rephrase the definition, rephrase this measure is to say to survey registrants in new GTLDs. Take out the words, a sample of duplicates. Mm-hmm. Survey registrants in new GTLDs. Strike the next sentence and suggest that questions, survey questions would include the motivations for registration, intentions to be defensive, satisfaction with the choices available, and a perception that greater competition has been available as well. So we're not going to delineate every single question, but get to the flavor of the kinds of questions. And I think that's right, Michael.
Yeah, Rosemary, I support that approach. I think that's great.
Yeah, it gives sufficient specificity for the review team to look at without trying to, write the damn thing for them.
Nail it down, yeah.
And we would be able to respond to the USG to say that advice on the survey, we're going to take your advice on expanding that survey to dive into more of the nuances of defensive registration. Question for the team is, does that really address everything in the paragraph here on this item?
Well, Michael here, the other thing that they raise right up front is, of course, prices. And I presume that means prices of goods that can be found at the various sites.
No. I think it's the price of buying a domain name. I mean, I can't believe they're talking about...
No. Rosemary, I'm sure it's the price of the domain name.
Okay. Yes.
So we should keep away from prices.
Yeah, well, wait till we get to the rest of the U.S. government comments. It's all over the place.
Yeah, all right. Can I declare myself as not being a free market economy fan? Sometimes people pay for what they want to get, and that may not be bottom dollar.
Yes.
No, I said that to them today, Cheryl, because I said it's hard to measure the benefits versus costs on defensive registrations, because if I paid $30 for a registration that was defensive, then I know the benefit was at least $30, or I wouldn't have paid it. So
yeah.
Anyway, do any of our choice measures get to the notion of price for the registrant?
So now, oh, Rosemary here, so we're in competition, I think, aren't we?
Negative. We're still on consumer choice metrics.
Okay, so, sorry, Barry. On page 11, our measures related to prices are in our section on competition. So could we just hold the point that the USG is concerned about prices until we get into our for when we get into our competition area? I think, from my point of view, the problem that the economists and policymakers who have been working in competition forever and ever and ever have with prices is that, from a consumer point of view, so much of it is value-based. And the example I always use in trying to nail these discussions is the price of an SMS or a text is, you know, thousands of times its marginal cost, which is kind of like zero. And yet we're all pretty happy to pay. So I think there's a whole area where the research in economics needs to kind of catch up with different, quite different markets, quite different markets. But we should hold, my suggestion at any rate is we hold all discussion about price until we get into our competition section.
And I think
go along with that, Rosemary, but you'll probably find a whole lot more about me when we do.
Yes, yes, no, I know. Yeah, yeah, no, I think I'm just trying to put all that discussion into one one boxing ring, Cheryl.
Okay, fine. So I can gird my loins for the battle to come. Fine, I can
That's
do
right.
that.
Get your punching bag out.
I guess in preparing, Michael here, in preparing the response then is to point out, to the extent that they're raising this question of price, if that's something appropriate to discuss in connection with competition and not necessarily choice.
That's a little too quick, because they are asking us to change, putting the metrics aside for a moment, they did ask us to modify our definition of choice,
mm-hmm.
apart from what other the metrics are. And their proposed modification to choice included a second sentence we want to throw away because it's all about cost and benefits. But they made a small change to our definition of choice. They added a parenthetical and they added one word. They added the word meaningful, meaning that they said that the consumer choice is defined as the range of quote-unquote meaningful options available to registrants and users for domain scripts, choices, et cetera. And then they put a parenthetical after the word options. And it was taking into account price, quality, and product diversity. So you could concede that my choice is affected not just by being able to get a domain name in .shop or .store, but the price matters too. Yes, it's okay to have a choice, but if it's exorbitantly expensive, it's not as good of a choice as if it's affordable. So there is some value to consider price in a definition of whether effective choice has been delivered. If we modify the definition the way the handful of words they asked for, the challenge for us becomes, well, then do we have to design metrics in the table that specifically go out and measure the stuff we put in the definition? And we've always tried to maintain a loose connection there. If we define something, that we said we would go out and try to measure it.
Mm-hmm.
So the threshold question is whether you buy the argument that the choices available to me as a registrant, the quality of those choices, how meaningful they are to me, is a function of the diversity, quality, reliability, and also the price. I find it hard to argue with that.
Barry, could you pull up where we got to with our definition of consumer choice? Have we dealt with this to the point of changing or not changing our definition? I've just lost the plot on that.
Yes. Let me pull it up.
So if we go back to see what...
Item 29.
29, yeah.
Consumer Choice, Consumer Trust, we modified considerably. Consumer Choice, haven't updated in the document yet.
Okay.
One second.
Back to Steve's point, we could still include, if this is what we decided to do, we could still include in the range of meaningful options bracket, taking into account price, quality, and product diversity, we could still leave that in the definition, but have our measurement of price in the competition section.
I agree. Yeah. I agree, Rosemary.
Yeah. So let's just confirm one way or the other whether we did accept that amendment to the definition to specify price, quality, and product diversity. Because I've just forgotten, and I think we need to be clear about that.
I don't believe we did. What we did change was that we were going to include meaningful, and then we were going to add a note number two, meaningful options will include price, quality, and product diversity.
Oh, okay. We did it in the note instead of changing the definition?
Correct.
Oh, great compromise.
Yeah, that works. That's good.
I'm speechless, Cheryl, by your last comment in the chat.
Oh. Sorry, I was just responding to Jonathan.
I don't think I want to follow the thread.
No, but it is a benefit. Sorry. But I was just being very particular about the photos of goats with me that are available on the internet. And that's fine.
Okie doke. So now where does not the chat, the US government comment, where does that take us? So we're sticking with our definition. We've got the measurement, the mention of price in the note, so we don't need to worry about a series of measures in consumer choice that relate to price. Have I got that right?
The way I understood it.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. So now just going through the next, with regard to three-year targets, have we dealt with part of her comment?
I'll just read this out real quickly. With respect to three-year targets for the various measures of defensive registrations on page 10, proposing that such registrations should not exceed 15% of total registrations, it would be more appropriate to measure the cost of defensive registrations than simply to calculate the quantity of such registrations without more information. It is impossible to determine the overall effect of a defensive registration rate of 15% on whether the introduction of new GTLDs will produce benefits in excess of cost.
Steve, are they getting the cue on that?
Yes, Steve, go.
And so in my meeting with Justice today, I explained how it was not even part of the affirmation that we would balance costs and benefits, so we established that. But I acknowledge that 2 to 3 years from today, when we're designing the next round of rights protection mechanisms, or we're fine-tuning them, or designing the next round of new TLDs, it would actually be instructive to know, well, what were the costs of defensive registrations in this 2012 round? And if we could get that, that doesn't mean we have to go out and get all costs, nor does it mean we have to go out and get all benefits and balance them out. We're not going to take that on. But defensive registrations are really at the core of probably the most legitimate objections to this expansion and how it's being managed.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we could add 2 rows to get the defensive registration costs. And Michael's brought this up 2 weeks ago from INTA's comment. One would be seeing if we can capture enough data, and by the way, the Commerce Department asked for all this in the competition section, so we're going to get to this, but if we had data on the actual domain names that were sold, that were registered in the new space, then you can multiply that times the percentage that we assumed were potentially defensive, and you'd get the portion of registration costs that were defensive. Right? Now, you can get, with 1,900 new operators, it isn't going to be easy to get 1,900 of them to tell us how many were sold at what price, especially because they're not the resellers. The retailers are the registrars. So there's a significant quantity of registrars would have to be canvassed and report the number of domain names sold and the dollar revenue of the sold names, and we'd have to calculate that for every month or every year over the next 3 years. If you had that number, that's the registration revenue, then you separately go to our defensive registration statistics, and let's suppose we came up with 11%, 10%, based on all three metrics. Well, then you could apply that 10% times those revenues and say, that's the cost of defensive registration. That only counts, however, the explicit costs paid to the registrar and registry. It doesn't count the money spent inside of a company on internal costs and external legal costs to pursue the recovery or to shut down an infringing website. See, because the only ones they buy defensively are the ones that they know that the cyber squatters are going to try to use. A fair amount of Michael's costs, Michael, are chasing down a typographical variant that you never anticipated that is sucking away traffic and confusing your customers.
Mm-hmm.
To get that data requires a survey, and you said this yourself. You had to survey registrants. And by the way, we did come up with a survey of new GTLD registrants just a half an hour ago.
Yeah.
But we asked them about defensive registrations. In that same survey, we would ask them, what did you pay for your defensive registrations to registrars and registries? And another question is, what were your internal and external legal costs on defensive registrations and pursuing infringing registrations? So I'll stop there, and it basically calls for adding a new row that we get data from registrars and adding another element to the survey on defensive registration.
Rosemary here, just in response to that, I suspect that's much narrower than they have in mind when they're talking about costs and benefits. This whole, it's a continuation of the discussion coming out of the economic framework document. So they're talking about costs and benefits to society as a whole. They're economic costs, concepts. So it's not just the costs to the people defensively registering. If you're assessing costs in this way, you have to take account of costs to the consumers and costs of confusion. And it's a very, very broad process, and it's simply way out of scope for what we're trying to do.
Yes.
And I think we should just take that position that we hear them for many years. They have been saying to ICANN, we don't think you should do this unless we're sure of the economic welfare outcomes of this expansion of the program. And that's what they're saying here, in my view. They're basically saying, you still haven't done the cost-benefit analysis of the expansion of the GTLDs, and you should do it now. I think that's territory that's beyond our scope, happily. I think we should have whatever discussion we're going to have about cost in the sense of prices, and as you say, Steve, that's just one element of the cost, in our competition section, but this whole issue of cost-benefit analysis, I think we need to deal with it clearly and really deal with it once.
Yeah, look, while I see what you're saying, and I say yes, I agree on that, I still think there is a benefit to having some simple questions added to the registrant survey. I think it works to meet the raised concern of some data on this, but without getting us into what is out of scope. And I agree with you with what is out of scope.
And Rosemary here, and I'm quite happy with that, and Steve's comment in the chat, that we ask some questions about defensive registrations one of them is how much did you pay and were you happy about that? That's an entirely different matter from this cost-benefit analysis stuff, where, in fact, you're trying to project the costs over the next 25 years so that you can assess the benefits over the next 25 years. You might incur all the costs in the first 2 years and none of the benefits, but if you look 25 years down the track, and the easiest way to think about this is like the cost of building the telephone network or the cost of building the roads. You incur all of the costs in the first 10 years.
Or the cost of buying the automatic franking machine and folding for the letter stuffer that you did five, 10 years back when you used to think mail was a way to advertise. I mean, you know, sorry. Don't go there.
So, that's right. So if we just sidestep the whole cost-benefit analysis thing, we've got our survey, which is specifically focusing on defensive registrations, and now we can include the amount paid. I'm happy with all of that.
Michael here, it's with a heavy heart that I have to agree. insofar as one of my roles was reviewing the economic analysis as part of the INTA committee and screaming about the fact, one, that it was not accurate, and two, that it was answering the question that was being asked in the way that supported the answer. It was designed in that way. However, I do agree. I think the cost benefit analysis, as I see the goal of these metrics, is beyond the scope of what we were asked to do. I do agree, though, that having the ability to put together the metrics of the cost in the survey would be useful in the type of information and, I suppose if I can say, photograph or motion picture that we're trying to enable the metrics to provide, which is looking at these specific answers. So I agree, I think, with Rosemary on that.
So I think, Rosemary again, I think somewhere in our document, and I'm not sure where, we need to say that the issue of cost-benefit analysis was raised in the public comments around our draft advice, that we feel firstly that those issues were canvassed in the discussion around the economic framework analysis, and secondly that those issues are out of scope for this particular working group. Steve?
Yeah, I agree with that, but we can go further and explain that the cost versus benefit was not part of the review and the affirmation of commitments, nor was it part of the board resolution, and that's why it's out of scope.
That's good.
We have such good arguments for why it's out of scope. I went on today with my meeting with Justice to explain how it's practically impossible to tote up all the costs and even to begin to quantify the benefit side. Because why bother doing half the exercise, the cost side, if you can't get any of the revenues, the benefit side? And they were somewhat speechless. I await their response. So I agree with you. We should have that caveat in here. I'll be happy to draft it, too.
Oh, great.
But returning to this point, we're all in agreement that the survey of new GTLD registrants would include questions about their experience, their satisfaction, and, oh, yes, what they paid both internally and externally for what they perceive as defensive purposes. But that is just a survey.
Mm-hmm.
I was also suggesting adding a row where we turn to ICANN to get actual data on what is paid to register domain names in the new GTLD space. Since that data then can be applied times percentage defensive at some point by someone else, not by us. But they would calculate the percentages we came up with on our three measures, and they would multiply that times the total registration revenue. So a question right out for you, Barry, is that under the new contracts, does ICANN get data on the revenue for name registration in the new GTLDs?
Rosemary, here, before you go to that, Barry, I'm not sure, Steve, how that metric links to what we're trying to do.
May I explain then?
Yep.
If Barry, by some magic, could tell us the registration revenue at retail prices, not wholesale, in the total new GTLD space. Because I already know they know the number of names. That's how they calculate the fees that the registrar pay. If we knew that, you'd have a number. Let's say in 2015, the total amount paid for the new GTLDs, registrations, was $500 million. And then separately, we have come up with three ways to get to the percentage of names that are defensive. And we came up with something in the neighborhood of 10% defensive. Well, one could apply the 10% to the $500 million, and they could work their way towards the cost of defensive registration.
But Rosemary, why do that? Because we've just decided that's out of scope.
No, what's out of scope is a full accounting of costs and benefits, but I'm trying to make the argument that the largest single cost, the one that we have a lot of trouble with, is the cost of defensive registrations. And that's the elephant in the room. It isn't going to go away. It'll be here when this review team analyzes it. And it'll be a kind of a ridiculous omission that we worked hard to say the percentage of defensive registrations, but we didn't ask ICANN to gather any data that could be useful at determining the cost of the defensive registrations. We're now half pregnant because we all agreed we would ask the survey of what they spent. But one cannot apply a survey percentage to a global population if you didn't capture the global data.
The problem I have is going from our – I've got a range of problems, Rosemary, here. One is going from our three potential indicators of defensive registration. But the second thing is the cost of the registration – from the point of view of someone who's worrying about defensive registrations, the actual cost, the money paid to ICANN, will be the smallest part of their costs. It will be all the damage done to their brand and the running around of in corporate legal and the consumer confusion, and those costs we won't be including in our cost side of what is not the cost-benefit analysis. But those are the really big costs. And then, of course, even if we have the costs, we've not got the benefits. So our contribution is partial. I really don't see that it's going to add anything.
Yeah, I know we're on a we're on a time check, so I'll stop. I don't want to try to answer that right now. We'll save it for the next call. But keep in mind that the competition section, the statistics that I've just described the capture of, are the heart and soul of what the U.S. government wants in the competition side. So we're going to deal with this again a little later.
Okay, Rosemary, very very quickly here, there's a huge gap in my mind between collecting information about the prices consumers pay for registrations compared to the economic cost that you need to collect when you're doing a proper economic cost-benefit analysis. Those two things are very, very different. So we'll hold all that for next week. Now, Barry wanted me to keep 10 minutes, which I haven't done, Barry, but I've given you 7 minutes to talk about Prague and PowerPoints and other bits of administration. So over to you.
Great. Thank you, Rosemary. So based on our schedule, we essentially just have next Tuesday that we'll meet again, and then everybody flies out on Thursday, and then next weekend is when we'll be potentially briefing the GNSO Council and the GAC about our efforts. A couple of things going on here. Our original intent was to try to have the final advice letter completed yesterday, and until we get through all of these comments, the final advice letter can't be completed till we've done just that. So the question on the table is twofold. First is, you know, what does the working group intend to brief the GNSO Council on? The sub-question to that is, what will we be briefing the GAC about? And there was a third question, which I've lost. Oh, and what materials are we going to be supplying to them
in this briefing. And I'm going to close that out with the caveat that there's probably a decent chance that when we brief the GNSO on the weekend prior to the GAC, that there will be friction that what the working group has created here has not been deliberated by the GNSO Council. So that may go in conflict with what the working group would like to accomplish with the GAC.
Rosemary here, if I can just respond to that last point. That came up in the short discussion where I was chatting with GNSO Council about sending the letter to GAC. And my response was that we were still in the public comment phase. And that will be still true, I think, in Prague, not where people provide their public comments, but we're actually trying to deal with them. So that seemed to settle that matter at that point with GNSO Council. And when I think about Prague, I'm thinking the same thing, that what we want to do is brief people with progress in processing the public comments that we received. We won't be briefing people on what our draft advice will be before we give that to the GNSO Council. So that's my kind of loose-ish construction of what we'll be up to in Prague.
And Barry, so if I could derive from that answer, then
yeah.
We'll only be looking to provide just a PowerPoint. We won't be providing an update to the advice letter of the latest and greatest.
Let me just respond, and then we'll go to Steve. I just feel that the work that we're doing is extremely important and that we ought not just try and rush the last bit of it, which is going to be difficult and controversial, in order to meet our self-imposed deadline. That we ought to just continue with our moderate and measured approach to finishing this work. Steve?
Thank you. I agree with all that and would suggest that if we presented anything, it could be the first 9 slides of the PowerPoint. We potentially could update the definitions, assuming we get them done before Prague, just the definitions.
Mm-hmm.
And then rather than dive into the table, which is full of red ink,
mm-hmm.
I would highlight 3 or 4 of our most lively
mm-hmm.
Discussions. For instance, the scope of costs versus benefits, the discussion of defensive registrations, the question about whether we could get price data for competition assessment purposes, and the types of things we want to measure to assess consumer trust. Just those 4 bullets, 1 slide each,
mm-hmm.
where we would inform folks about that where we started, the kind of comments we received, and where we're leaning right now,
mm.
or at least what the debate has been within the working group.
Because
mm-hmm. those are the meatiest topics. It's what everybody would ask about if we had Q&A anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And you do all that without actually revealing an updated advice letter because we haven't finished it yet.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Steve. So, Barry, does that make it clear enough for you to do the preparation for Prague?
Yes, I'll try taking a stab at a second version of the PowerPoint. And the motivation for me asking this is that I'm catching heat internally to mm. be able to distribute whatever it is we are going to present to the GNSO mm. Council and to the GAC so that they mm. can prepare in time. And
yes.
pretty much the end of this week is kind of the deadline to try to get some of those materials over,
mm-hmm.
although I might be able to push it into next week.
Mm-hmm. If you adopt the high-level framework approach that Steve just outlined, it seems to me that you could meet the end-of-the-week deadline.
Okay, very good. And
yes.
so if I hear this correctly, that basically mm-hmm. post-Prague, we'll continue our normal course of action of completing the comments and completing the final draft, and then we'll just try to map out that schedule and hopefully be able to hit the July, if not early August, council meeting for formal
mm-hmm.
submission then.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds right.
Yep, that sounds good. So that also means an updated timeline slide, which would be good.
Yeah, slide 7. Yeah, so it's roughly 9 slides plus 4 new ones.
Yeah.
Okay. And Barry, I'm happy to work with you on drafting those slides and circulating to the team, whatever you like.
Okay, great.
That's
the only other thing that I'll say is for our session for next Tuesday, we basically completed consumer trust and consumer choice. I've started to make edits into the next version of the advice letter. I hope to have all of the recommended actions loaded into the advice letter so that we don't necessarily review it at the next meeting, but at least it'll be the latest and greatest that we have. I suspect there may be one or two clarifications that I'll need from the working group, but we can do that online.
How many more rows in this document?
There's 24 to review once we get into competition at our next session.
Some of those are going to be bundled because of our at least proposed existing stance on some of the matters.
Hmm.
And in pursuit to my earlier suggestion, let's see if we can get the three definitions nailed really early on the call so that those updated definitions could be part of what we present in PROC.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that would be important.
And it'll be just a good check for all of us, too, because we've been in the weeds for a few calls now, haven't we? Okay, everybody, I think any last comments? From anybody?
Thank you. I think we're actually doing extraordinarily well because there's some fairly meaty stuff here.
Yep.
Hey, and there's no call this Friday then, right? I thought I heard a rumor we were going to do another call Friday.
That was just me making it up, Steve, as I went along.
Rosemary loves these calls so much she wants to have them every single day for this week.
It's like milk with your cereal, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, everybody, have a great evening, day, afternoon. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.